Hello, listeners. Welcome to System Mastery. It's the podcast where we beat a dead horse 1d6 damage at a time. I'm Jeff, my co-host John is around here somewhere, and this week, we love vampires. I mean werewolves. Actually, what we really love is Prometheans. Nope, change my mind, it's ghosts. What if there was a 90s game that combined all those things and more? Well, there is, and it's called Nightlife, and it's by R. Lee Ermey, and we've got a copy, and here's a review of it. Boom! System Mastery. I like the nightlife, baby, she says. I like the nightlife, baby, she says. Let's go! Welcome back. I'm Jeff, your host. With me, as always, your host, John. John, how are you this week?
I am energetic. I'm ready to go. I am ready to do the damn thing.
You feeling pumped?
I am so pumped, full of sparkling apple cider.
Oh, man. We had a little holiday party last night, and I have like 4 bottles of leftover sparkling cider, and I've been going through it like it's just soda.
Oh, it's so good. As soon as it hits your lips, you're like, oh, I'm ready to face the day.
Ooh, so sugared up.
Oh, yeah.
So before we get into this week's episode, I do have to read out a quick thank you to the person who gave us this bounty of a ridiculous book from the 90s.
Oh, it's great, and I am excited about it.
So we've got a thanks going out to Dan Mulcaren, who gave us this book along with a couple of others when we met up with him and a bunch of listeners up in L.A. a few weeks ago.
Yeah, it was us. It was James D'Amato. We went up there, met and Gret.
I'm not familiar with this James D'Amato. You mean James Swingin' D'Amato?
Big Swangin' D'Amato.
Yeah, James Big Swangin' D'Amato. Yeah, we've got it right. Okay, good. So we're talking about the same guy. So the book was given to us by a fellow named Dan. He asked us if we were to use the book, which we were, of course we were going to use the book, to read a little something for him online. So here, let me just read his ad copy for you. Smash Fiction is a podcast where each episode focuses around a hypothetical match between two or more fictional characters. Each character gets a couple of nerd advocates to argue on their behalf, with an impartial judge setting up an absurd premise and declaring a winner by the end of the episode. A lot of the time, it's a fight. Power Rangers versus Godzilla, Gandalf versus Dumbledore, Carrie versus Matilda, but there are plenty of times when it's not. We've had a battle of the bands between Spinal Tap and Flight of the Conchords, a thievery contest between Black Cat and Catwoman, and a version of the Hunger Games that included Arya Stark, Wesley Crusher, and Hannah Montana. Each match includes a bonus lightning round wherein the judge throws a ridiculous task at them that the advocates haven't prepared for, meaning they have to improvise an answer for, say, why Brock Samson would make a better Pokemon trainer than Sterling Archer, or why Riddick could beat Daredevil in a dance-off. So again, that was Smash Fiction from Dan Mulcaren, who gave us the book. Thank you so much, Dan. Let's get back to it. Although, actually, that sounds like a fun premise.
Oh, yeah, it's rad.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm into it. I'm on board. So what did we review, John? Or what will we review?
What have we reviewed in the future already?
Well, let's see. No, I'm asking, what have we reviewed?
Just go through each and every one of them.
Heroes Unlimited.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah, yeah. I don't remember what. Tales from the Floating Vagabond.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, 4 was, Prime Directive?
I don't know. I thought Prime Directives was 5.
Ooh, man. That was 4. That's
a baby.
It's a mystery.
Ooh, that's a spicy meatball.
I don't remember, and that's only episode 4 of 80-something.
God, it's almost like I'm old, and I can't remember back more than, like, 4 days.
Here's a weird thing. I remember off the top of my head that episode 51 was the one where we reviewed a bunch of micro games.
Yeah, good.
I don't know why.
I don't know why either.
I don't know what 52 was. I know 50 was first edition D&D because it had to be.
It had to.
It was fated by the spheres.
Yeah.
So what did we review?
Well, this week we've got Nightlife.
We've got the Nightlife, baby.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I love the Nightlife. I've got to boogie on the disco.
What are they actually saying right there?
I don't know.
On the disco night. It's a night or
I don't know.
Time?
I think it's just aha. It's just noises.
It's like someone singing a disco song. They know they don't actually have to do work.
No.
Yeah. So they just kind of go, I like to boogie on the disco.
Yeah, no, I mean, you basically hit the things you needed to do in a disco song.
Yeah, you announced...
mentioned boogieing and the disco.
Yeah.
At this point, you may as well just give up, because that's what you've done. You've made a disco song, you're done.
I am a person who enjoys dancing, and now I will dance.
Yeah.
The plot of any disco song.
Congratulations, you did it. You've summed up every disco song.
Well, I mean, except for, this is the thing about disco, is we only remember, like, the 10 good disco songs. So whenever people our age are like, yeah, disco's not that bad. I mean, think about it. You've got that I Will Survive song. That song rules. You got that Stayin' Alive. That's a good song. What about that, it's the same song. I'm thinking of the Bee Gees, Stayin' Alive.
What about Stayin' Alive? And then there was the Bee Gees with Stayin' Alive. And of course, Staying Alive was a good one.
But those songs are the good ones. There are there's an insane amount of terrible disco that we don't know about. And that's the one we're talking about, where it's all just like, I like to dance. I like to boogie. Okay, let's move on to the next track. Boogieing, dancing, 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 and boogieing. Okay, next track.
I'm here at the disco boogie. Like, okay, great. I get it.
Man, we are already disco artists.
We're done. We are now published disco artisans. We have some very fine disco for you here.
We've laid down those tracks. We have sharpened our chest hair into a fine point.
We are ready to take it on to the disco battle circuit.
All
fighting
of my,
other discos.
All of my towels are either burnt orange or avocado green. I am a child of the 70s.
There we go. I've got these flared bottoms on my bells.
God damn it. So Nightlife is a game set in mid-90s fantasy New York, where there's a lot of vampires and what have yous all running around doing their nasty nighttime activities.
Doing the nasty.
Well, I assume so.
I mean, probably.
I can't stop. It's 90s New York. It's still all gross.
Now, the thing about Nightlife, when you first open it up, you're like, oh, it's a book about running around and you're sort of in human society, but you're a vampire or a werewolf or a ghost or a, like, Promethean, like, some sort of animated thing. And you're like, oh, man.
You're a demon? Yeah.
Wow, this is just straight up White Wolf, like, man, they must have ripped this right off.
Oh,
but
yeah.
No.
It's like when you first open it, you're like, what if someone took the Palladium system of how to write a book, which is to say two-column format, soft cover, line art, and then applied vampire liberally? That's your first thought when you read it. But then you look at the year it came out.
And it came out basically at the same time that Vampire the Masquerade did.
Not New World of Darkness, mind you.
Yeah, well, Vampire the Masquerade, Vampire the Requiem.
Yeah, or even the concept of the Old World of Darkness. This is before that. This is just when Vampire came out, before they knew they were going to do a werewolf book.
Yeah, it is right along in just this parallel evolution where both of these companies decided, yeah, 1991, this is the year that people need weird, different type of horror movie genre RPGs. So White Wolf leaned heavily into the goth scene.
Yeah, they went after live action, gothiness. They tried to attract a new audience, basically, where this one appears to be trying to pick up the scraps of the old.
Well, Nightlife really, instead of veering hard into the goth scene, they veered hard towards the
punks?
Movie scene. It's
it's
splatterpunk. It's lots of the sort of 80s schlock horror that was more like, it's more graphic and it's a lot weirder. So that type of feel to it, they went with that rather than the more dour gothness.
Yeah, basically, if you were to sum up Vampire the Masquerade or Requiem or whichever one the first one was into a movie, it'd probably be Bram Stoker's Dracula, right? It's all gothy and swooshy and everyone's all like fainting into couches, and there's a monster there, but he's mostly just trying to watch movies and, like, speak in a dumb accent, and that's pretty much Vampire.
Well, it's very Interview with a Vampire.
That's good, too. But this is more like Lost Boys. I mean, if it wasn't set in a terrible New York, this would be Lost Boys.
Yeah, it is very much all of the ideas that it has for the different types of monsters you can play as. You can see different influences from various movies. Like vampires, you're very getting a Lost Boys feel for it. The werewolves have more of a The Howling type of feel to them.
Yeah.
So a lot of the like monsters in here. You can tell whoever wrote it was very big into horror movies.
Yeah, but a very specific type of horror movie. Not the swooshy romantic horror movies.
No.
But the ones where there's copious amounts of Karo syrup with red food coloring in it.
Yes. This is the guy who's like, no, I don't want the old style Dracula. I want the new style Dracula where it's all just like people sitting in pools of blood and stuff.
Yeah. I want that vampire that, or that Dracula that's just the bad guy of the Blade 3 movie.
Yeah.
Where Dracula is played by Heatwave from Legends of Tomorrow.
Yeah, that's exactly what I want.
I just realized that when I was rewatching that movie the other day, and I was like, oh my god, it's that guy. It's the guy from Prison Break. He's Dracula in this. Okay, so yeah, this is like Vampire by Way of Fangoria. It's goopy, it's splatterpunky, but it's so interesting because it reads when you first crack it open like, oh, this is someone who was like, oh, the entire world of darkness, I can get all that into one book.
Yeah. So when you first look at it, it seems very derivative, but it is, like I was saying, just very parallel evolution. It popped up around the same time.
Yeah, it's parallel evolution. It's kind of like if you were a scientist and you were like, well, this aardvark is just a ripoff anteater. I don't even know why they bothered. Nope, they came up on their own in different places and at different times. So one thing I really wanted to talk about with this book is the cover.
Well, I mean, the art in general, but the cover, oh my god, is amazing.
So to briefly describe the cover to you, we've got a sexy vampire with a Batman necklace and a ruffly fringed vest but gray skin, wielding an 80s gray power mullet as if it were a sword, and clutched in his hands is the most boobical version of Where's Wanda I've ever seen, except that she also has a power mullet.
Yeah, man, she is like 100% business in the front, and a ridiculous party in the back.
Yeah, she's got, like, the front of her hair says, I own Hot Rod magazines, and the back of her hair says, I'm the Predator.
Like, spelled out. Her hair spells out, I am the Predator.
And then her top is straight up a Where's Wanda top, but man, she has, like, Ralph Bakshi-style cartoon burn nipples.
Oh, yeah, man. She is nips a-poppin'. It is very cold in that subway that they are in where a cougar train is coming down the line.
That may sound like we're just talking crazy now, but no, they're sitting on some subway tracks, and in the background emerging from a tunnel is the 915 ghost of a cougar.
It's the cougar train is pulling into town.
The ghost of a cougar is never late, but if you need to catch it, you're gonna have to transfer to the U line later. But meanwhile, a couple more ghost monkey cats are attacking from the left. And there's a whole lot of graffiti saying just dumb stuff.
Oh, yeah. It's all like, if you want to be immortal, call 555-3824.
Live forever. So this game is basically, what if New York was infested with a whole lot of every kind of cool undead you ever heard of, but they're all related somehow because they are all of the kin?
Well, the kin is sort of the catch-all for, are you not human? So even if you, because they have sort of the main races that you can play as a player character, you can be like, all right, you can be the standard, like, vampire, werewolf, ghost, white.
Yeah, white, which is basically a gooey zombie.
There's the animates, which cover the range from everything from Frankenstein to your Chucky from Child's Play to Christine if you want to be a possessed car.
Robots.
You know, robot cop.
If you want to play an evil robot, which I assume has been a villain in at least one Stephen King book.
Yeah, sure, why not?
It's probably just called, like, Susan or something.
But you get those, and that's going to be your standard, like, this is what you can be.
Yeah, you've also got demons.
Oh, yeah, demons are one of them. And yeah, they have a difference between daemons, which you can be, which it's demon, but it's A-E.
Yeah.
And then there are demons, which it's just standard spelling, D-E-M.
Yeah.
And demons are, like, the evil version of them.
Yeah. Yeah, so daemons are the good ones, demons are the bad ones. And I feel like when we're listing out the playable races, we would be remiss and troublesome indeed if we forgot to mention the best of the starting races that you can play in this game.
I don't even want to mention them.
The nature spirits of Native American folklore, which are called Inuits.
God damn it.
Just Inuits.
Yep, that's one of the races you can be. You can be an Inuit, which is just a nature spirit.
It's a nature spirit, which has some... Okay, so the reason that we're both hemming and hawing and laughing here is because Inuit, of course, is a word that's already been taken.
Yeah. It's not a monster.
It's it describes a group of the first people and some Native American groups that live in more northerly parts of North America. It doesn't describe any one particular tribe, but it is a term that means the people. It describes a whole group of actual people. This is kind of like if they had a race in this game that was called Mexicans.
Yeah, it's real weird.
It's not cool. It's not like they're a bad race or bad guys or anything. They're just sort of capricious Native American nature spirits. But it does lead to some sentences that are just weird in context. Like when you see Inuits, known for their habits of dressing flamboyantly and acting eccentrically.
You're like, what?
Huh? Okay. Inuits, who are all terrible at baseball.
What? That's the weirdest racism.
I know. So, yeah, didn't want to forget them. The one race of monsters that are Native Americans.
Yeah. And you're going to pick one of those.
Yeah.
And almost like a point-by thing, each of them has strengths and weaknesses. And the ones who have a lot more strengths also have a bunch of weaknesses. So, like, when you first look at Vampire... Vampire gets a crap load of bonuses to their stats.
Yeah, they do. They get the classic vampire array of being super strong and fast and beautiful.
Yeah, their whole deal is just a ton of extra stuff you get.
Yeah.
But they have a shitload of weaknesses.
They have one of my favorite sidebars in the book, no less, which is where they have the standard conversation between a human and a vampire where the human asks the vampire which ones of the myths about their weaknesses are true. And he's like, well, crosses are bullshit. And it's like, okay, let's go through the list. Crosses are bullshit. Silver don't do anything. Sunlight works, but it's got to be real sunlight. Garlic works for some reason. Also, if you put a lemon in my mouth and bury me at a crossroads and I get too confused to rise up and devour the living, I can't have sesame seeds on my foot. But definitely something that isn't real is that I can't be killed by my uncle. Like, but no, it's everything works except for crosses.
No, that works. They have a vulnerability, too, and the vulnerabilities are all extra damage you take. So it's sunlight, fire,
yeah.
Running water.
Which is real bad.
Garlic.
Yeah.
I remember holy now, symbols.
The only one that wasn't real was that they can see themselves in the mirror.
Yeah, unless you are a very specific type of vampire. There is several versions of vampire in this, because there's the one you can play as, and then there's two sections of... like other monsters in this book as well.
Yeah, some of which are technically playable and some of which are not.
Yeah, and there's like five different other vampires in here.
Yeah,
and one of them is like, oh, this one can't see itself. There you go.
Yeah, you got your Nosferatus and your what's the Japanese vampire called?
The Japanese vampire, like it's like Udo.
Uno or Ubu or something.
I think it's Udo because I kept thinking Udon.
Oh, okay. I keep thinking Udo Kier would play one of these. But no, they wanted to add an extra Japanese vampire, which is a real weird choice because Japan doesn't really have a vampire thing.
Yeah, I mean, you can get like weird Japanese monsters. You've got the kappa you could throw in there, which is...
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
you get
at least...
Onis and all kinds. They're big on ghosts, too.
Yeah, but going through the book, there's a shitload of monsters from various other cultures. But man, no Oni, no kappa, nothing.
Just a made-up Japanese vampire that is not part of traditional vampire myth.
It's weird. Of all the things you could have picked to be, like, your monster from Japan, they just made up a vampire.
I'm kind of sad that they didn't use the animates with Japan and give us, like, you know, mechs. It would have been pretty great if we got, like, the 1992 version of that. Get some of them, I can't remember any of their names now. But whatever. Giant robots from 1992 Japan. There you go. So yeah.
Yeah, the big thing with those is once you pick that, you get your package. So it's the bonus. Yeah, shut up.
Is it a big package, John? Do you get a big package?
Well, that depends on what you pick.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes you can pick a big package. But sometimes it's a little package, but it's still useful.
It's not the size of the package. It's how many drawbacks you take.
Yeah. So this doesn't have a system where you can pick and choose. Because, like, vampire, you could pick and say, oh, yeah, my vampire actually is, like, affected by holy symbols, whereas normally you aren't. Whereas this is, if you pick werewolf, you just are vulnerable to silver. It doesn't matter. You are.
Mm-hmm.
Literally everything in the book is vulnerable to fire to varying degrees.
Yes.
So usually it's double damage from fire. Some things are triple damage, but it's the only thing that is across the board a vulnerability.
Yeah, no one likes fire.
So you have a bunch of things you pick that way, but then when you go to actually make your guy, you have to roll up your stats.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a down-the-line roll.
Yes, it is.
And it's 4d10 per.
Right, so your average roll for a stat for a human would be a 20. But, of course, you're going to get these big old bonuses and occasional penalties to your stats based on which one of the kin you are.
Yeah. So if I decide, all right, I'm going to be a vampire, I'm going to get, like, a plus 20 to my strength, I'm going to get a plus, like, 10 to dexterity, I've got a plus 10 to how attractive I am, and I may as well go through the stats.
Yes, please do. Please start listing off the stats.
Okay, so you've got your average ones for any given game. So you've got strength, you've got dexterity, you've got intelligence.
Yes, those three are there.
This one adds fit, which is basically your constitution, but in this game is noteworthy for how many times you can resurrect yourself.
Yeah, you got to resurrect yourself, and eventually, if you resurrect yourself too many times, you'll end up jiggity-checking yourself.
Yeah, well, you have to resurrect yourself before you resurrect-check yourself.
Well, if you wreck yourself, you resurrect yourself.
And so it's unless you die the true death,
mm-hmm.
which there are a couple ways for any given thing. So, if you're a vampire, if someone stakes you and cuts your head off, or you are submerged in running water, or you're left out in the sun, then you die the true death.
Yeah.
But if someone were to just, reduce you to zero hit points, you would die, but then you would come back the next evening.
Yeah, the very next day, which is why you can also play as the cat.
Yeah. Then you'll come back the very next day.
Yeah, even if they thought you were a goner.
Nope. You came back the very next day.
Yeah, it turns out that you just can't stay away.
So your fit, whatever that score is how many times you can do that total. So if I've got a fit score of 19, I can die and come back 19 times before I die.
Right, before you really die.
Before I'm actually full-on dead.
So the next one is your ATT, or your attractiveness, which is interesting because this game officially passes the seduction skill test, but not the stat test, because in this game, attraction is how hot you are to members of the opposite sex.
Yep. However, the seduction skill in this just says being able to make people think you're sexy.
Yeah, so the seduction skill passes, but unfortunately the book is still going to get a failing grade, which what are you going to expect from 1992, wherein the attractiveness stat only works on members of the opposite sex, no matter what you're trying to attract.
Yep.
Even in 1992 New York, which was a very gay place indeed.
And even if you're just some weird gross monster.
Yeah, there's that too. Most of these monsters are super gross.
You also have perception as a stat,
mm-hmm.
and of course you get luck.
Yeah, luck works a little differently than the other ones, but you still roll 4d10 for it. It works for a couple of different things. This game uses luck as the skill or as the substitute for skills you don't have. So if you don't have a skill in, say, driving and you need to drive a car, you roll 1/5 of your luck score, and the game's percentile-based, so you try to roll under 1/5 of your luck score.
Yeah, so if you were trying to do something that was just a straight, strength roll, you try and roll under strength.
Mm-hmm.
If you were using a skill, then you take your skill plus stat, whatever it happens to be, mm-hmm. and try and roll under there.
So 4d10 for all of those, plus the bonuses you accrue for being a particular member of the kin races. And then you're going to head over to skills, which is where this game shows its I'm an old game roots.
Yeah, and has 109 skills.
And not only does it have 109 skills, but the way you get to pick which skills you have is you are given 20 rolls of a d10.
Yeah, so you have 20 d10 dice rolls. And let's say I want to have some skill in, let's say, shooting guns. So I want firearms. I'm going to go there. I'm going to get however many D10 I want. And let's say I want to be good at it. I'm going to take four of my 20 D10s. I'm going to put them into there. Mm-hmm. Then I get to roll my D10s and see what the actual score is.
Yes, you can't roll and then assign again if you get a low score. You have to do all your assigning before you get to roll the dice.
Well, you can afterwards. So if I say I put four D10 in this, I roll those, see what I got, and then if it's low, I can keep assigning more.
Yeah.
But if I wanted to go, all right, I want to get like a decent score in something, I'll put five dice in it, and I roll like shit, I now have to just keep throwing dice until it's good, which means I might just run out of dice to put into skills before I get everything I want.
Hey, man, maybe your character could suck. That'd be an interesting role-playing challenge. Why don't you get out of your power gaming mindset and learn to play the game?
I know, right?
God.
I get 20 D10 to put in these 109 skills, so... Good. Great.
There's a few too many skills. That is definitely true. And the whole thing where you have to roll to see whether or not your skills are any good.
Yeah, it 100% fails the John test for a game because skills are fucking worthless.
The John test? Do you really think you need to be that arrogant and name a rule after yourself?
Yeah.
Jesus, man.
Some kind of arrogant douchebag that would do that.
All right. So... After skills, we're going to go to edges.
Yep. So everyone has a list of common edges. These are your superpowers that sort of everyone can do. What they did as a thing for this is there's one that is called Drain that everybody gets. It is for certain things, like if you are a vampire or I think a white or a few other ones, you have to drain a certain amount of whatever your preferred thing is per night.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a vampire, you need like 10 hit points worth of blood per night. And if you're a white, you need to drain like 10 hit points worth of life force per night.
Right. And if you're an Inuit, you need to also, I think it's also life force.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Most of the things are either life force, blood, or occasionally
flesh.
Yeah. There are weird ones like werewolf is like terror, as so is the ghost.
Yeah,
ghost and werewolf are like, oh, I feed off of fear. Okay, great.
So
weird.
So they need to scare people, and then some of them are like, some of the grosser monsters like, oh, I need to goop you up with my eye organs, and then drain goop out of you.
It's I still drain you with blood, but I have to like. I'm a bug man, and I have to get all of my bugs to surround you, and they bite you and drain blood through that. And you're like, ew, that's super gross. The weird thing with a drain is, depending on what you are, either you have to do it every night, or you can do it voluntarily. Draining is the easiest way for people to get healing. So for every hit point you drain from someone, you get that hit point back. So if I'm super fucked up and damaged, I can go up to some mortal and just drain their life essence if I'm a ghost.
Yes, for example, any member of the herd, you can go and you can drain.
Yes, the herd.
Because that's what we call mortals in this game. Humans are the herd.
Yay.
So everyone gets drain, and they all get weird versions of drain.
And the other thing is, there's addiction or not to drains.
I was going
to
say, addiction becomes addictive. Or, sorry, addiction becomes addictive.
Yeah.
Drain becomes addictive. To humans if you do it to them too often.
And if it's certain things. So like the werewolf one feeds off of, I think it's pain actually.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that can't be addictive. But the bite from a vampire or getting your life force drained from an Inuit, that can be addictive. And so that's how you get Crowleys or Renfields.
Yes. Which are exactly what they sound like. They are adherents or people who follow you around because they are either addicted or dedicated to you.
Yeah, so the Renfields are addicted to you and they're little toadies. The Crowleys are more just human, like, retainers. These are just guys who are on your side.
Yeah, they're vampire groupies.
They're
maybe not necessarily ones that are obsessed with having their blood drunk, but are just vampire groupies in general.
They're like, hey, we are on board. We like what you're doing. We're all about it. Let's go.
Right. So, you know, for example, if you have a couple of these guys, then you could have a situation where, like, I don't know, let's say a white and an Inuit walk into a bar.
God damn it.
What?
Stop it. Okay. Stab it. Yeah, there's a white and one of the white women and an Inuit.
Yeah. This Inuit walks into a bar and he's like, hey, where are all the white women at?
And they're like, oh, there's a table of them over there and there's these ghost women.
This is a stupid book. All right, so the edges are interesting in that they never work especially well on other members of the kin.
Yeah, so anytime you have something like, if I've got, like, I'm a ghost and I have an edge that lets me spookify people, and I'm like, here, I've got a thing that lets me scare you so I can feed off of you, it doesn't really work on members of the kin.
Right. Now, you wouldn't want to drain members of the kin anyway. You can, but it can actually be addictive to you, and then you become a monster that eats your own kind.
Yeah. And then, well, at that point, you're like, oh, man, I am addicted to trying to drink blood from other kin members. So now I have the choice of either being some kin member's toady or turning into a serial killer that just drains the kin.
Right. And you don't want that to end up. It's just, it's an emergency measure that's available to you. But there's all these cool edge powers, you know, like, oh, I've got super claws and I can breathe fire and I can turn into a bat and I can control the bodies of mortals and so on, that primarily only work on mortals. If you try to use them against the kin, you take a minus 50% penalty to your attempt to do it. And even if you succeed, they take less damage from it.
So the edges, like I said, you've got the generic ones that everybody has access to. And that's just stuff like claws, drain, also infection, which is turning other people into your type of kin, which a lot of them get. Occasionally you'll get ones that are like, oh, you can only infect people if they die in a certain way.
Right.
But so everyone has access to those, and there's a fairly decent amount of generic edges you can get.
It's interesting because some of the edges are repeated between different types of kin, but are simply better for some kin than others. For example, vampires have the ability to turn into wolves because of Bram Stoker's Dracula. But werewolves have the ability to turn into good wolves.
Oh yeah, they have their wolf form, which rather than just being like, I am a wolf, like a vampire does, it's, I am a, like, werewolf movie wolf.
Yeah.
Where it's like Brotherhood of the Wolf, giant wolf type wolf.
Yeah, but you can be a big ass wolf, which is for some reason better than being the, you know, John Talbot style werewolf.
Yeah.
Like the lycanthrope form.
You get a plus like 10 or 20. No, it's plus 20 to your strength in werewolf form, but then a plus 30 as a wolf. I was like, really? That's kind of odd.
Yeah, wolf is just better than werewolf. I mean, I guess it's fine as long as you turn into a really big wolf, and as long as the werewolf form is one of those shitty ones where they don't even use makeup.
Well, it's one of those ones where it's like the original Wolfman.
Well, what's the Benicio del Toro one where he literally
Wolfman.
Just where he literally it's just yeah Wolfman remake where his werewolf form is literally just Benicio del Toro all sweaty and grumpy.
Yeah, that's my wolf form.
My wolf form is I have a furrowed brow and I have sweat on me.
Yeah, I'm whatever that werewolf movie was with Jack Nicholson where he's all just angry and Jack Nicholson-y.
I took a hair pick to my sideburns. Puffed those up a little bit so I kind of look like Chester A. Arthur and, oh, I'm a werewolf.
Yeah, so the edges that you get that are specific to whatever your race is, like turning into a mist or a bat or a wolf as a vampire or getting a werewolf form or whatever, some you start with.
Mm-hmm.
It'll give you like, oh, what are you, a vampire? Great, you can start with drain and infection. And you get the ability to, like, have claws or something. And that's, like, your starting package of edges you start with. And then you can pay for extra ones. And you can pick from either the list of things that everyone gets or the ones specific to you.
And if you're wondering how you pay for them, well, now we need to talk about one of the more interesting mechanics in this game, which is the humanity system.
Yeah. I mean, White Wolf had humanity for its vampires.
Yep.
But it was a 1 to 10 track, and it was mostly just a, if you did something really crazy, good or bad, if you spent some XP, you could raise it, or if you were, like, frenzied and murdered a bunch of people, it might lower. But it was just sort of a role-playing thing for most of the time.
It was the same kind of curse mechanic that they put into every one of the White Wolf games. Like, for example, where you had Disquiet for the Prometheans. It's the measure of how monstery you are.
Yeah, but in this, it is almost like your mana for the game.
It's a lot of stuff. It's how monstery you are, it's your mana, and it's your XP.
Well, it's not your XP, really.
Well, you use it to buy powers and stuff.
Yeah. It's weird because you spend humanity to do things. Like, let's say I want to use one of my edges. I want to go ahead and fly. I have flight as an edge.
Uh-huh.
The use of that might cost me, say, 5 of my humanity in order to fly, because humans don't fly, and so I have a bit of a disconnect with my humanity whenever I do something that humans can't do.
Right. So, effectively, you can get more monstery over the course of a game by just constantly doing monster things. The book even goes so far as to say that when you use your monsteriness, when you use your edges, that you lower your humanity, you look more like a monster. You read more as a monster every time you do it, even if you're not doing anything.
Yeah, so if I've got a humanity score and I'm up in like the 80s or something out of 100 of humanity, I'll probably start looking more like a human. You know, if I'm a white, normally they look kind of like weird and corpsey, but I'll look more like a human and less like a corpse. But if I drop down to like 20 humanity, I'm going to start looking kind of desiccated. I'll look like, you know, I've been buried for a while. I'll just look corpsey.
Right. And having a 100 humanity is indistinguishable and identical to being a human.
Yeah, for basically anything that isn't one of the weirder monsters. Because the standard monsters you can be, those are all like, yeah, if you get to 100 humanity, then great, you just look like a human most of the time.
Right.
But if you get to like 100 humanity and you're an ogre, then it doesn't matter. You still just look like an ogre.
That's true. There are two humanity stats. One of them is your current humanity. The other is your maximum humanity. Your maximum humanity cannot exceed 100. If it does begin to exceed 100, that is how you get the ability to start spending XP on edges and stuff.
Well, it's not that it can't exceed 100. It's you get... the way humanity works is at the end of the session,
yeah,
if you are below 0, because
uh-huh.
you can spend into the negative if you want to,
yeah,
for every 10 points you need in order to get to positive, you lose one from your max humanity score.
Right.
So if I end the session and my humanity score is currently at like negative 30, it's going to take 3 tens for me to get up there. Same thing if it was 27, because you'd still need another 10 to get above.
Right.
Then I'm going to lose 3 from the maximum of humanity. So if I had a 100 max humanity, it would drop down to 97.
Right.
Now, if I want to raise that back up and I've got a 97 humanity, I would have to end the game and be like, oh yeah, my current humanity score is 120. And now I've got to lower my humanity score down to below whatever my max is. But for each 10 it goes down, I get plus 1.
Yes.
So it's whatever it ends on for the session, which means basically right before the session ends, if you don't care about your max humanity, if you're like 100 and you don't give a shit, use as much crap as you want. Just go hog wild and use all your edges, because you'll be like, oh, I got minus 1 to my humanity. But if you want it to raise up, your entire session is going to be, all right, well, I can't use any of my cool powers. I can't feed on anyone. I just have to walk around talking to humans and being a nice person.
Yep. Why don't we talk a little bit about the setting of nightlife?
Well, it's New York.
Yeah, it's 90s. It's early 90s New York. They've really wanted to stretch out New York and lay it out and say, here's all the places you can go to and here's all the things you can do. So there's all these little sections, almost as if they were character descriptions for different like neighborhoods. So they'd be like, Harlem. Harlem's primary population is Afro-American, because that's the term they were using at the time. Here's the different gangs that you'll find there. Here's the different types of industries that are happening there. Here is the elemental spirit that guards these people.
Yeah, there's a lot of sections for the book that are the other weird supernatural things, because it throws just spaghetti at the wall with everything.
Yep.
It is like, yeah, all the monsters, whatever. Here they go. One of the sections, though, is for elementals. and the elementals are sort of removed from your standard kin because they don't really care too much. Like, the kin are like infected humans for the most part, whereas the elementals are just spirits of something. So it's, you're a water elemental or an earth elemental, so they aren't really the same as the kin.
Right.
But you have a city elemental, the concretes.
The concretes, which are basically really more like urban elementals because they really exist more because of the people that are in the city than because of the buildings in the city.
Yeah, so they represent a section of a town that is both like what the town looks like, how it's doing like with prosperity, who lives there, all that is going to be reflected in what the spirit is. So if you've got something like one of the more powerful ones is the spirit of Liberty Island, who is just called the Guard. He looks right. like one of the guards that goes around that, like the Statue of Liberty.
Uh-huh.
And he's super powerful because it's the Statue of Liberty. But then I was looking at it and I go, yeah, but that doesn't really matter. Like, I guess if someone wants to fuck up the Statue of Liberty, he'll be there. But it's not really like anyone is hanging out living there.
No, there's
so
not
he doesn't
a
really have a lot
Liberty,
of people though. To protect.
Yeah, no, it's he pretty much because he can't leave. So I feel like if they extended his range a little bit, then he'd be a bit more useful of a character. But it's kind of fun to know that there's a super powerful elemental living out there. Unfortunately, the super powerful concrete elemental living on Statue of Liberty Island is not the Statue of Liberty. I was a little disappointed about that.
No, the Statue of Liberty is just the Statue of Liberty.
No, it should come to life and walk around while Higher and Higher by Jackie Wilson plays.
Yeah, obviously.
That's the only thing that it should do.
And the concretes are much more invested in humanity than a lot of things because they are a representation of the city. They are very big on protecting their part of the city, which includes both protecting the city itself and the people in it.
Right. So, like I was saying, this is a very New York-y game. It wants you to know that there's all these gangs running around, that there's constant intrigue happening between the Yakuza and the Czars, which is the gang from Russia. For some reason, they've imported the Bloods and Crips.
Which was weird. They're like, oh yeah, the Bloods and Crips are here. And at first I was like, oh, you know, that would be kind of funny if you're like, oh, the Bloods are a vampire, and then you've got the Crypts, and that's the Whites, and it would be funny. But no, it's actually just literally the Bloods and the Crips from California.
The problem being that Blood or Crypt are too good of names for this guy to, or this book to have come up with on its own.
No, because the actual,
gangs.
Like, kin gangs in this are, I'm the Gore Boys.
Yeah, you got the Gore Boys, the Bubonics.
Yeah, it's all just weird, goofy shit that they wouldn't be.
They're too overthought, is the thing. They're always things like, the Hairy Men, and you're like, no one would call themselves that.
Yeah, that's not a thing. That's not a gang name. I'm sorry.
Yes, try again. The names are even worse. The gang names that people have in this are the funniest shit in the world. You have all these guys named things like Johnny AB1.
Yeah, you've got just names for people that they're like, what are you? I'm Sam X. I'm IOVLTP.
I'm Dr. Torturer.
Yeah, it's very oddly edgy.
Yeah, it's edgy in a way that's like, oh, hang on, it's like post-ironic appreciation of edginess at this point. When you look back at this and you're like, oh, that's cute. You've got a female woman, a character named W.O. Babylon.
Hey.
Do you get it? Do you get that? It's a Whore of Babylon reference, but we're calling her W.O. because that's gangy sounding.
So the main things that you are going to interact with in this game, there are the different factions. So you've got the commune. The commune is the, like, pro-human kin.
The Camarilla, if you will.
They want to make it so that people don't know that there are monsters. They want to protect the humans. They're just sort of the nice monsters.
Mm-hmm.
Then the opposite side of that is the complex. The complex hate humanity. They want to rule humanity, turn them into an actual herd. They're just the asshole bad guys.
Yeah, so there's those, and then there's, of course, there's an evil corporation.
Yeah, you get the Morningstar Corporation, and of course it's called the Morningstar Corporation because it's run by a daemon, which, Ha ha, Lucifer Morningstar.
There's a lot of, this book has a lot of that post-satanic panic Christian transgression stuff in it.
Oh yeah, one of the main NPCs who's like, oh, I'm a neutral and I just run the big, like, Switzerland area where all the people can go that are kin is named Golgotha, which, if you don't know, is the name of the hill that Christ was crucified on.
Yeah, so, and of course, again, there's a major NPC named Whore of Babylon. It's like right after Satanic Panic petered out and ended, a lot of game companies really went above and beyond to dip right back into sort of playing with Christianity as one of the brushes in the toolkit they had.
Yeah, they were like, oh, well, now that the Satanic Panic thing has worn off, we want to get some notoriety because D&D blew up because of that.
Yeah.
So we're like, all right, well, how can we, like, bait Christians into giving us free publicity?
Right, and so you had all these games with characters named things like Golgotha and God Killer and so on.
Yeah.
So this book is rife with that. It's rare that you encounter a character that doesn't have some sort of ironic Christian name. You have that one ghost in it that was named, like, I have survived life and death and live beyond or something?
It's like, I am alive, I've triumphed over death or something, but it's all just an acronym, so the name of this ghost is like, I-A-T-L-O-D.
Yeah. So, yeah. Basically, the idea is that you're supposed to play as these gritty, punky murder vampires and werewolves and stuff in New York. It doesn't, I mean, there's all these villains and so on, but mostly the way, when you read through the book, you're feeling like, what am I supposed to do? Hang around in gangs and get in fights, I guess?
Pretty much. Like, the main things they give you is you can try and stop the complex.
Right.
You can, like, either get involved with or try and stop some of the machinations of Morningstar, although they're mostly just a greedy corporation rather than actively evil.
Yeah, you can defend against the incursions from the wormholes.
Yeah, that's your main monster thing.
Yeah.
Like, if you're one of these monsters, the actual monsters that you are scared of are things from a place called Wormholes, and it is actual wormholes.
Yeah, it's not portals to other dimensions. It's literally holes dug by giant worms.
Yeah, and it's full of things like weird bug monsters and slug stuff, and then
skinless
there is
demons and things like that. Yeah,
there is a giant worm that is sort of like the big boss that you could find in a wormhole.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, I mean, it's huge and has a ton of hit points and can fuck you up, and that's sort of your big end game boss of running around in a wormhole.
You know, I'm actually going to take back my earlier comment that this book doesn't feel like it gives you anything to do. It actually gives you a ton to do. It's an interesting premise. You play as weird, gross, punky monsters in a world where humans don't know monsters are there, even though they are constantly there, and there are thousands of them.
Well, yeah, it was one thing when they first went, like, all right, here's the, like, six or seven monster guys you can be. And you're like, all right, you know, in a city that has millions of people, if there are, like, 100 werewolves total in the city, that's not going to attract too much attention, sure. But then they're like, all right, not only are there all these, there's fucking bug men, and there's guys who are weird Native American spirits that hate you, and they look exactly like humans, and there's a whistling sound, and there's pangolin, and it's a dude who can rip his head off and fly around with his guts dangling beneath him.
Well, that's a Filipino thing or a Malay thing, and it's almost always ladies.
Well, man.
It's almost always ladies who is a head.
This one is a weird German one.
Yeah.
Is the pangolin.
What? That's stupid. Why would they take a myth from, like, Southeast Asia and put it in Germany?
I don't know, man. It's weird. They were like, here you go. We spelled it wrong, and we said it's from Germany. And there you go. There's a pangolin.
Okay. I mean, even the art that they used in the book has a vaguely Asian lady's head atop the standard sea of goopy organs.
Yep. Just all your innards.
Yeah. The pangolin, or pernagolin, or whatever you want to call it, is one of my favorite of the vampire types, because, you know, it's just a floating goop head.
And it's, oh, well, how does it feed? It puts all its goopy bits around you.
Eventually it cuts off your head and then sticks its body down in there and uses its head to take over your body. It makes for great horror movies.
Yeah, it's a super weird deep cut to put in here. And the fact that, like, that's in here and a bunch of other more common ones aren't is odd.
Yeah, but, you know, there's some fantasy stuff in here in case you felt like that was really missing. If you're like, man, this game where I play a vampire that hates a werewolf biker, doesn't have enough goblins and orcs in it. Well, you're wrong. It's got those things. You're good. You've got goblins, you've got orcs and trolls and ogres.
Of course, it's a, like, gobbling-in, so it's like G-O-B-B-L-Y-N-N-E.
So it's like a goblin that's made with like a made out of wicker, and you can buy it at the local tourist market. Welcome to ye old goblin shop.
Yeah, pretty much. You've got some more mythology weird things. So you've got like Medusa, and you've got some Rakshasas in there.
The Rakshasa, by the way, straight up the poster, appearance, everything. The 80s horror movie Cat's Eye.
Yeah.
That's all it is. It is just, hey, did you want to play the couple of villainous cat people from the movie Cat's Eye? We've got you covered.
Yeah, and instead of being like an actual like cat-headed person, it's just like, oh, I've got like cat eyes. Ooh. Now, the other thing in this which is interesting is they took a lot of stuff as well from like horror movies. Like I had said at the beginning, they've got the Shocker is a type of monster in here, and it is just straight up the villain from the movie Shocker.
Yeah, and of course you can use an animate to create Chucky from Child's Play. There's a monster that looks suspiciously like a cross between two of the Cenobites.
There is one that is called a Toxix, and it is 100% the Toxic Avenger. Like, the picture of it is literally just the Toxic Avenger.
Wow, that is definitely just the Toxic Avenger. You also have, let's see, there's also Sergeant Kabukiman.
Yep, there is indeed.
Yeah,
he's one of the NPCs, is an ogre who was, like, raised by Kabuki guys.
Yeah, so big fans of trauma films here.
Yeah.
Which is weird, because I don't know if any of you guys have ever tried watching a trauma film, but it's hard.
They're real bad, but considering these guys right at the start are like, oh, we're into splatterpunk. I'm like, okay, so that means you're into shitty gore movies. All right.
Oh, you know, I just realized I really need to apologize for the very, very, very beginning of the episode when I said the book was written by R. Lee Ermey.
Oh, yeah.
It's not. It's written by L. Lee Cerny.
Yeah, but, you know, whatever.
I thought it was I thought it was R. Lee Ermey, and sorry about that.
The other thing that has, it's very kind of weird to me in this, is it has zombies, but it is not your Romero zombies. It's sort of a cross between that and the voodoo zombie.
Nice.
So it's like, what is this? It's kind of a brainless undead that follows your commands, and it doesn't really need to eat flesh, but it doesn't have, like, it is dead, but it is your standard like slave zombie thing.
Okay, so it's like a voodoo zombie.
It's a voodoo zombie that is an actual undead, though.
That is also dead.
Yeah, it's weird.
Okay, so basically what I'm hearing is that the zombies in this game, not the whites, because the whites are a playable race of dead guys, but they look like gooey corpses as opposed to looking like dried up desiccated corpses. The zombies in this follow the Weekend at Bernie's 2 rules.
Pretty much.
Which is an actual dead guy, follows your commands, dances when it hears calypso music, right?
Yeah, obviously.
Am I right? That's another thing about the zombies in this. That's
100% in the book. It's canon.
Yeah, that's no one's going to argue with us.
Yeah, one of the like main NPCs in here is a bartender that is a zombie.
Nice. You know, one of my favorite zombies ever was in the Sigil game, the Planescape Sigil.
Yeah.
Where they had the one zombie that was just the signpost.
Yep.
Like, what's your job? Stand here. People are going to hammer things into you, and that's your life.
Yep. But whatever, you're a zombie, you don't care.
You don't care. You don't know. So, all right, then. You want to do your favorite and least favorite things, John, about Nightlife?
Sure thing. I will indeed.
Great. So, 1992's Nightlife by L. Lee Cerny. John, what is your favorite thing?
Favorite thing, gosh, I'm going to go with, the diversity of the monsters in this.
Mm-hmm.
Given that at the time, the tendency for things like White Wolf to focus on a monster, or even if they did have multiple ones, it would just be like a couple in a grouping. Whereas this has a shitload of monsters, and it does have optional build rules to be them. So if you really want to be like, nah, man, screw being a werewolf, I want to be like a pangolin and I want to run around with my guts out, you can technically do that.
Oh, yeah, it's real easy. The rules are there for you to play as the grosser of the monsters. It's just They left it so that you were more likely to play the more accessible monsters for ease of writing stories for the DM.
Yeah.
But you don't have to. If your DM's like, fine, you guys can just play gross monsters that fly around eating people, then sure, the rules are there to support it.
Yeah, and I mean, the book does say, like, hey, GMs, if you want to, you can allow these or not. We put the actual character creation rules for them in the back of the book where all the monster, like...
The weird bestiary
stuff is.
Yeah.
But the person who runs the game is the CP City Planner.
That's right, the City Planner. In one of the weirder versions of the DM that we've heard of so far.
Yeah, so it's like, in the CP section are the rules for that. So if your players really are familiar with the game and they want to run around as a half-greer, then sure, whatever.
CP has taken on a horrible meaning since that time period.
I know.
It's kind of weird that it's... But that's okay. You can play as a... If you're running the game, you are...
You can play as Comet Pizza.
You can play as Comet Pizza. Man, what this world has come to. All right.
So yeah, that was, for me, really interesting is how much they put into this game for the different type of monsters you can be.
Yeah. No, that was very inventive.
How about you? What's the best thing for you?
What's my favorite thing?
Yeah.
Brown paper packages.
Oh, tied up with string?
All tied up with string.
Man, you know what I love? Whiskers on kittens.
Yeah, that's a great thing to love. I'm sorry. My favorite thing in this book is going to be the inventiveness of it in general. I love the setting. I mean, normally...
Yeah, I almost said the setting.
It's funny, because I love the concept of the setting, and what I mean by the setting is the interpersonal relationships between all these monsters. Now they have, like... gang wars that are happening between monsters and rules for how monsters can interact with other monsters and how they can contact the human press to get things done. Because here's the thing, it's spoiler alert, my least favorite thing is also going to be the setting.
Huh.
So anyway, I love that aspect of the setting. And John, what is your least favorite thing?
Man, I gotta go with the skill system in this. I mean, I know I harp on that shit a lot.
It's a bad skill system.
It is not only just one of the... The pet peeves that I have of way too many skills, but you get no option of having a decent spread. And the fact that it is, instead of like point buy or you pick a number and you get X amount of points in it, the fact that you have to roll randomly to see how many you get means one player might be able to have a decent amount of like points and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to go one D10 at a time.
Oh, yeah.
And be like, okay, this skill, roll a D10. All right, was that good enough? No? Okay, roll another one. All right, that was good. We'll move on. But
you have that one guy who's like, I'm going to make a gunsmith Joe. He's the best gunner in the Gunnylands. And he's like, all right, I'm putting a D10 into guns. One. Another D10 into guns. One. Another D10 into guns. One. All right, so at the end, I have 20 in guns.
Yeah, the skill system in this was... really poorly thought out. I mean, it does the same sort of thing with your random generated stats, but at least the monsters all go like, what are you supposed to be good at? Here's a big bonus to that.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you roll sort of poorly, if you're a ghost, you just have weapon immunity to anything that isn't like fire or cold iron.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you care what your stats are? Like, the stats aren't as important, but the skill system is... utter garbage.
Yeah, it's not a very well divided. It's just too random. They kind of messed up on the randomness. It's unnecessarily random in a situation where you're going to unbalance your own game.
Yeah, if they had even just one of these, like if it was a skill list of say 30 skills and you got 20 dice worth, I'd be like, okay. Or if it was, you know, 100 skills but you got a good amount of skill points to put wherever you want, sure. The combination of the two is wretched. So there you go. That's mine. What's your least favorite thing in a nightlife?
Brown paper packages tied up with anything other than string.
Yeah. When you get those brown paper packages and they're tied up with ribbons, I'm like, the fuck are you doing?
What is this nonsense? You use ribbons with wrapping paper and twine or string with brown paper. Get your shit together, clerk.
Sir, excuse me, I would like to see your manager.
I would like to see him naked. Oh, sorry. I just like to see him
naked. Damn it.
Damn it. I'm going to go.
I should go.
So my least favorite thing in this book, and this is going to be an example of Jeff being wildly unfair to an old game. I hate stuff set in New York.
Lol.
It's just overdone. There's too much New York stuff out there. It's not the worst thing example of it ever. It's just, oh boy, the big city where everything happens, the center of the world. When you are in New York, it is it's a place like no other. People who leave New York always talking about how much they miss New York. And you can fucking take it.
At least for me, I'm like, you know, New York is a decent enough place to set your monster game. Because if you see someone that looks super weird, you're like, well, I'm in New York.
I guess. Although I do that all the time anyway. I'm in San Diego. I see some gross thing on the bus. I'm like, eh.
Eh, you're gonna get, just John.
You're going to get that sometimes. It's normal. There's a great place they could have set this game. Santa Carla. You know, where all the damn vampires are? That would have been a fine place to set the game.
No, you set the game in New Carla.
New Jack City.
Yeah, New Jack Swing City.
Yeah, New New Jack Swing City of Heroes.
There you go.
That's where it's going to be set. So, that's it. Otherwise, I actually kind of like this game is the thing.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't terrible.
It's got some real issues in the skill system, but...
For a game that came out in 91, this is downright playable.
Yeah, this is brilliant for 91. It's crazy good.
Yeah.
So, and it's unheard... I've never heard of it. I've heard of so many games, and this just slid right past me.
Yeah, well, it's the same people who made Ace Agents, which we reviewed before.
Yeah, it's Stellar Games, so they have made other things. And this isn't even, like, the only book in the line. This book actually had a couple of supplements that came out and floated around at some point.
Oh, yeah. One of the biggest ones is their supplement for Wizards, and it is all throughout this book. Keeps going, like... Oh, and this thing hates sorcerers. For more information on that, buy our book Magic in Nightlife. You're like, fuck. Stop putting, like, little ads for your other book throughout this book.
Right. You know, it's interesting to me because when I first started reading this, I hadn't checked the year it came out, and I saw that. It was like, check out our supplement for sorcerers. I was like, man, how much more White Wolf can this book get? That the one big expansion for it is just Mage. They're like, whoops, sorry, we forgot to put Mage in there. Here you go. And if you want to play a race of fantasy heroes from a prehistoric era, check out our other book that has Exalted. I mean... Heroes of antiquity,
the risen up, the divine needies,
the suddenly exaltos,
suddenly exalto. Yeah. I think I have my character for the bonus content.
Speaking of the bonus content, folks, if you would wait, hang on, John, would you play this game?
Yeah, sure, why not?
I would too. Great. Speaking of the bonus content, folks. If you want to support us on Patreon at any level whatsoever, you get the bonus content, which is where we make characters in the game that we just reviewed, which, by the way, we would both totally play. This was a neat, fun game. I thought it was kind of cool.
Yeah, I think my character is going to be John Mellon Cougar Train.
Well, I'm going to be making Sun Lee Exalto. So I don't know about you. So, that's the Patreon. Otherwise, if you want to contact us, you can do so at systemmastery@gmail, Twitter, Facebook, you name it, or Reddit. We're in all these places and all these things. You can find us, ask us your questions, send us your RPG recommendations, your questions for Afterthought, your movie recommendations, whatever you want to send us. We're out there. We exist. You can contact us.
Yep, it's fine. If you want to just send us a dead rat, whatever, that's cool.
Yeah, John loves dead rats.
Come on, Jared Leto. Give me some more of those.
He's got a whole pile of used Jared Leto stuff. Dead rats, condoms, fetal pigs.
Yep, just all over there.
Man, you get on Jared Leto's mailing list, and it is just a gross cavalcade of stuff being shoved through your mail slot.
If you know what I mean.
And I think you do. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. This has been a fun one. We'll see you in a little while with another episode. And until then, have a good week.